New Media Beat on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Jessica Farrell.
And I'm Jacob Friedenberg. We are here to bring you media news from all over the world. This week, from our global newsroom, we have news
from Japan.
Are you old enough to watch Japanese reality TV? Netflix thinks so. Why is a Japanese reality show called Old Enough, starring Japanese toddlers, so controversial and so popular? What was the show like in Japan? How did it change when Netflix repackaged it for audiences around the world?
From Tehran, have you heard what happened to Mahsa Amini? Why are tens of thousands of Iranians in the streets protesting? Is their internet being blocked because of this?
Mahsa Amini, a young Iranian woman, was killed tragically in police custody. Protests have erupted all over Iran. How are protesters using social media to organize? What is the Iranian government doing to stop these protesters from sharing their anger on social media?
From China, does Gru speak Mandarin? Should movie villains always be punished?
The government of China thinks movie villains should always be punished. No happy endings for the bad guys. Why did China change the ending of the Minions movie? Is it censorship to make sure that crime doesn't pay? How does China handle foreign films?
From Serbia, Euro Pride has been canceled in Belgrade.
The LGBTQ plus pride celebration, Euro Pride, has been canceled by the Serbian government. Social media is filled with anti-gay hate speech. How is social media being used in this Serbian culture war? What part is the Serbian government playing in this conflict between pride and hate speech on social media?
From India, how free is the internet in India? Can the government make rules to control the internet in India?
Are the 2021 internet rules a problem for media freedom in India? How is the Modi government controlling the internet, and what does that mean for social media users in India? Who runs the internet in India, big government or big tech?
From Russia, is Putin blocking the access to social media? Does war news flow freely across Russian borders?
How has Russia's war in Ukraine changed Russian social media? Do Russians have free and open access to the world of social media and war news from around the world?
All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
Let's start with a report about reality television in Japan. Alex Hodgko is here in Studio A to talk about a popular reality show in Japan that features very small children running errands in a very big city. This show has made a global splash since it started streaming on Netflix outside of Japan. Netflix changed the name of the show to Old Enough, and its very young cast has created lots of controversy. Alex, tell us something about the show before Netflix picked it up. What was the show called in Japan? When did it begin in Japan?
So before the name got changed to Old Enough, it was called Hanjanamente no Otusokai, which translates to My First Errand. And the show first began back in 1991, and it was aired on Nippon TV before Netflix got involved.
So is everything on these TV shows real?
It is real because it's part of Japanese culture, so they get their kids young to do these errands, but they have the producers of the show there. They supervise the kids to make sure if anything goes wrong, there's somebody there, but for the most part, it's all pretty much real.
Should these kids this young, be doing these chores?
They should, because as I said, it's part of the culture. So they try to, it builds confidence.
What do Japanese viewers think of this show? And are these actions considered normal in Japan?
In Japan, it would be normal, yes. But as the show was brought to Netflix, it's brought a lot of outrage in the world that should kids be doing this? Because you don't see your normal kid going out to the store by themselves and buying something, let alone they buy like baking products, housing, cleaning products, and all that stuff. But in Japan, it's no big deal, and they look at the show as entertainment, not child development.
Well, thank you, Alex. Is the internet blocked in Iran? Why? Why would the Iranian government want to prevent Iranians from accessing the internet and social media right now? Did something big happen? What is the government afraid of? Ananda Hoggard-Shannon is here to talk about the Iranian government, the internet, social media, and the massive protests in Iran. A 22-year-old woman died in police custody. Her name? Mahsa Amini. Her death led to nationwide protests and violence. According to CNN, there have been protests in 40 cities across Iran. More than 1,200 protesters have been arrested, and many, many people have been killed. The Committee to Protect Journalists reports that 20 journalists have been arrested in these anti-government protests. Ananda, there is a lot of news about these protests. What happened to this young woman? Why is there so much anger in Iran about the death of Mahsa Amini. And what does social media have to do with it?
Mahsa Amini was a 22-year-old woman from the Kurdish province in Iran, and she was in Tehran for just a short visit. She was planning to go back home when she was stopped and arrested by morality police for having too much hair out of her hijab. In Iran, it is mandatory that you have a head covering. However, they found that her hijab was too loose-fitting. They arrested her and beat her, which unfortunately led to her falling into a coma, therefore passing away. The reason there's so much anger in Iran is twofold. The first is that the government initially lied about her cause of death. They said it was a heart attack. However, what spurred her falling into a coma was the brutality that she endured from the morality police when she was being beaten. And then she collapsed when the severity of her injuries hit her. And then she unfortunately passed away. Social media has really been the way for Iranian women and the Iranian people to speak out against this. As you already know, the Iranian government is extremely strict. They do not like anyone speaking out, and this isn't the first time that they've had protests that have potentially spurred a revolution in the past 40 years. This is at least the fifth. Social media is playing a big part in this because it's not a women's rights issue, it's a human rights issue. Her having a loose-fitting hijab and losing her life for it, it wasn't about religion. It was always about control.
So we know that Mahsa died in police custody, that you have explicitly said. But my next question is, we know that the civilians in Iran have been protesting a lot. How exactly has the government responded?
The government hasn't responded well, to put it very bluntly. Not only have they deployed the military and massively armed police force, they've also shut down internet in parts of the country where the protests are more prevalent. The problem with the government shutting down the internet is that the last time they shut down the internet following protests, when the internet came back on and more Iranians were able to get their story out, we found out that so many people ended up dying, and we had no clue because there was no media coming out of Iran that wasn't government controlled. So having social media is really the only way the Iranian people can keep the government accountable for the brutality that it's causing against its own people.
So you mentioned social media and its prominent role in giving the Iranian people a voice that isn't controlled by the government. What has the impact of social media been on amplifying the message of these protesters?
It's had an extremely large impact when it comes to amplifying the message of these protesters. A common form of protest that we've seen on social media showing that they stand in solidarity with Iranian women in particular is shaving their hair, because that's what the morality police saw was the issue with Mahsa's hijab, and also burning their own hijabs and scarves, showing that they are still dedicated to the religion. However, they are not okay with extreme control that the government has over women. Did you also know that in Iran, if you kill a woman who looks like she's straying from, Islam, you are pretty much given a pat on the back, like, good job, you have saved the morality of women. But if you let her go out the house, it's a problem. You lose your life for it.
Mm. And then one last question regarding this topic. Who is the main voice behind these protests on social media?
It's mainly Iranian women. They are the focal point of this. And it's also just women, period. The thing that made this story go so, I'm not going to say viral, what made this story get so big is the fact that it people had already acknowledged that it wasn't an Iranian woman issue. It was a women's issue because we've seen so many governments worldwide cracking down on just rights for women. In our own home country, Roe v. Wade was taken away, and that's access to abortion. In Iran, you can't walk outside without your hijab without being killed, and we've seen that. In other countries that follow closely Islam, if you even walk outside without a man standing next to you, leading you with nothing but your eyes showing, it's considered a crime, and you're considered impure, and it's just horrible. For New Media Beat, I am Ananda Hogarth-Shannon, and back to you, Jacob.
Thank you, Ananda. Let's leave the unrest in Iran, and we'll be going to the movies in China after this break. We'll be back momentarily on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State College University at Old Westbury.
The Minions are a global brand. Why does the Chinese Communist Party care about the Minions? The government of China takes media seriously. The heavy hand of the government censorship controls what can be shown on the movie screens of China. My co-host, Jacob Friedenberg, has been digging into the movie business in China. What is the role of the government in the film industry? Jacob is here to tell us about how movies, especially foreign movies, must be approved for distribution in China. Jacob, is it easy for Hollywood to export movies to China?
So to put it simply, Jessica, no, it's not simple. China has a quota on how many foreign films a year can be imported and shown to Chinese audiences. And then on top of that, there is a board that these films must go through before they get approval for release. This board is called the General Administration of Press and Publication and the State Administration of Radio, Film, and Television. In order to get a film approved to show to Chinese audiences, they must pass those two particular boards, or as they people like to colloquially call them, Chinese censors.
And who revealed that the ending of the Minions was altered?
So the ending of Minions being altered was revealed on this social media platform in China called Weibo. For those of you that don't know, Weibo is basically the Chinese equivalent to Twitter. And a user posted that the ending was altered. And it said that in the American release of the film, originally, Gru and the main villain, Wild Knuckles, they go off and they become villains, and they hit it big, and that's what eventually leads up to the original Despicable Me movie, Despicable Me 2, and the rest of the Minions franchise. However, the ending that was released in China gives Gru the hero's turn before the hero's turn. It says that the villain, Wild Knuckles, was caught and reformed, as opposed, again, to the American ending, where they run away.
And once again, who's responsible for the censorship?
So, Chinese government is responsible for the censorship of these films. The party in control right now is called the Chinese Communist Party, which is led by China's leader, Xi Jinping.
And have other films been censored?
Yes, this is just the latest film to be censored, or if not outright banned. Films such as Titanic, Kung Fu Panda 3, Mission Impossible 3, and Doctor Strange are all movies that have been censored. Then you have films that have been outright banned. Films like Spider-Man, No Way From Home, Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings. You also have Back to the Future and movies like The Dark Knight, American classics that have been banned in China. And on top of that, you have the film Lightyear, which made such a big splash in America. That film is still in limbo, has not even gotten through to Chinese censors.
Okay, and what's been the response of the Chinese citizens and the CCP about the censorship?
So the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, funny enough, they haven't really responded about it. As I was doing research, I looked at the South China Morning Post, and that was the best I could find. And they acknowledged that the ending was altered. But there has been no general press release from the Chinese Communist Party. Generally, they've kind of just acted as if it didn't happen. Kind of just, it doesn't exist. That this was the original ending that was intended. And then you asked about the citizens. There have been a couple of LGBTQ plus advocates in China that have expressed their frustration with the Chinese Communist Party, especially given in light that Friends, the TV show, was recently released in China. And there's a couple of scenes that have LGBTQ plus references in them that were pulled from their Chinese releases.
Okay, and lastly, Jacob, why should we care in America if films are censored abroad?
Well, we should care because according to the Council on Foreign Relations, an American think tank, China is one of the strictest countries in terms of censorship. And in America, we pride ourselves on our freedom of speech and expression. There's a saying that is very important to the founding fathers, and it's from Voltaire, where it says that I may not agree with what you have to say, but I will die for your right to say it. We should be allowed to say something, even if it's offensive. And if we claim to be for freedom of speech here, how is it that we can make a film here that adds more representation and not fight for that abroad? Because ultimately, if we're doing that here and being like, okay, we're not going to offend this group of people over in this nation because we want to keep the money in our pockets, it ultimately looks like a political stunt. And unfortunately, that's kind of what this move looks like right now in light of all the recent censorship in China. From New Media Beat, I am Jacob Friedenberg. Back to you, Jessica.
Thanks, Jacob. Serbia is a long way from China. Let's talk about social media and hate speech in Serbia. There is a culture war happening in many countries around the world. This is a global conflict over media representations of gender orientation and gender identity. Not every culture is ready for gay pride. LGBTQ plus stories and characters are not accepted everywhere. Some nations, like Russia, are calling LGBTQ plus content gay propaganda that corrupts their young people. Laws are being passed to ban LGBTQ content. What's happening in Serbia? Serbia is an Eastern European nation that is having its own cultural crisis about gender orientation. Tanja Fizeme has news from Serbia about hate speech on social media. Tanja, what was the news about Europride, the gay pride celebration in Belgrade, that drew your attention to Serbia?
What brought my attention was that Europride, it's a gay pride event that's hosted like internationally to new cities every year. And this year it would have been in Serbia, but the president, Aleksandar Vučić, last minute canceled the event because he was kind of afraid the counter protest group were throwing like violence like online, throwing threats online. So he was kind of like weary about the safety. So he canceled it.
And although there weren't any consequences to those who threw hate speech and plans of violence online, what kind of view does this show from the law enforcement?
I think it shows the law enforcement is enabling their actions.
Okay. Has Twitter become a safe space for a right-wing extremist to spew hate crime?
Yes. With Serbia's strict media censorship, it's funny how they're still able to throw threats online. Even for different instances, you see people use Twitter as a safe space. Only sometimes you'll see an account get banned for violating their terms of hate crime, but more often than not, I see it. Even like different instances when Joe Biden won presidency, you know, Trump supporters using Twitter or other social media to share their beliefs with sometimes like racist and bigoted against another. For New Media Beat, I'm Tanja Fizeme. Back to you, Jessica.
Thank you, Tanja. Up next, we have news about internet in India. How has the government of Narendra Modi regulated the online world? Internet sovereignty and internet governance are important issues. Who makes the rules? More and more nations are trying to regulate the internet. What are the consequences? Is the internet regulation in India a problem for free expression? What is the problem that these internet laws are supposed to solve? And what are the consequences for Indian netizens and big tech?
Jessica Farrell is my co-host today on New Media Beat. She has chosen a complex issue, but nonetheless, it's an important topic. Who runs the internet? How should the government regulate the internet? What are the consequences when a government tries to control the big tech platforms? The Indian government of Narendra Modi passed the internet rules in 2021 that are changing the rules of the game for the big internet platforms, and especially internet users in India. Jessica, give us the basics. What did the government do to regulate the internet in the spring of 2021?
So in the spring of 2021 in India, they created new laws and IT rules that would limit what social media users are allowed to post.
So which social media platforms in specific does this affect?
For the most part, it mainly affects Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, but there are many more that also are affected.
Are all medias complying to these new laws?
No, not all of them are. Twitter actually refused to follow along because they feel like they give their users a platform for their freedom of speech, and they feel like this is taking that away from them.
And what do these new laws mean for users of these platforms that have been affected?
So platforms have to remove anything that's posted that's violent, misleading, fake, political, or if it speaks negatively on the government. Also, every month they have to post a form showing that they're complying with these new rules and following everything. For New Media Beats, I am Jessica Farrell. Back to you, Jacob.
Thanks, Jessica. There's a war in Ukraine, if you haven't already noticed. Russia's war in Ukraine frightens the world. What part have the media played in this war? How has Putin's war changed the media in Russia? Was there a free media to begin with? What happened to the news media and social media because of this ugly war? Can Russians use the internet and social media to access the news of this war and express their opinions without fear of surveillance and/or retaliation? Are foreign news media accessible in Russia? Is there an independent news media in Russia? Can Russians access foreign social media like Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or any other outside Russian forms of media? New Media Beat reporter Aniashvili is ready to give us an intro to the Russian internet and the social media during this war in Ukraine. Ani, can Russians use the same social media that we do, for example, like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter? Are they accessible in Russia?
It's definitely not as accessible as it used to be. Russia has always had a very harsh and controversial way of censorship, but since war with Ukraine, censorship has reached new heights. In Russian media, Russian authorities block and censor every single opinion that opposes their agenda, and they make sure to control the narrative about the war with Ukraine.
So you said that these platforms and other outlets were censored already in Russia before this war. Why has censorship then, especially of the media in Russia, increased so drastically since the war in Ukraine started?
Russian authorities have taken censorship extremely seriously since war with Ukraine and make sure to filter out every single post that goes against the agenda. They delete posts that even say things like pray for Ukraine and make sure that Russian users don't view them. The authorities want to avoid language that portrays the harm to people. And Russia's Internet Censor Board warns that referring to the ongoing special operation, quote, special operation, as an invasion, attack, or war will lead to the website being blocked and taken down, and citizens are punished accordingly. Out of fear for prosecution, many independent Russian news outlets shut down, including the BBC, which suspended all of its operations in Russia. Russia no longer has any independent news outlets, and the whole media is fully controlled by Putin.
So I guess when you say independent news media, that includes Facebook and Twitter?
Yes. So Facebook and Twitter have been banned in Russia since March of 2022, which actually was an interesting move by Russian authorities because they're both the least used social medias in Russia, but they're the most used outside of Russia. So this has created little outcry within the country, but has created a big statement and almost a threat outside of the country.
And lastly, what are the ways Russian authorities intimidate people in Russia?
They've enacted laws that are punishable up to 15 years for even using words like war or invasion. They have put pressure against independent voices and have cracked down on journalists, human rights defenders, activists, and even celebrities or anyone who uses social media to get their message across. They've arrested, judicially harassed, and raided critics. Russian authorities have also gone as far to vandalize people's homes and spray paint Ukrainian military symbols and phrases like, "Don't betray your motherland," and "a traitor lives here," an attempt to intimidate and silence people who publicly spoke out. From New Media V, I am Ani Iashvili. Back to you, Jacob.
Thank you, Ani. And that's all for this week.
Thanks for listening to New Media Beat. Thanks to our producer, Michael Green, and to our wonderful engineer, Tanya Fizeme. Many thanks to my co-host, Jacob Friedenberg.
Thanks, Jessica. Today we heard reports from Jessica Farrell, Tanya Fizeme, Jacob Friedenberg, Alex Hajko, Ani Iashvili, and Ananda Hogard-Shannon.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts, new and old, and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGMN.
Stay tuned for more great programming coming up next on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio.